And welcome to The End of Religion, a podcast exploring the subversive spirituality of Jesus. And that's right, we said subversive. We don't believe that Jesus of Nazareth came to establish a new religion, but to herald and actualize the end of all religion. And that's what we're exploring in this podcast. Now, my name is Bruxy Cavey, and I'm the author of a book called The End of Religion. And I will maybe sometimes be here by myself, but most of the time, hopefully, I'll be joined by others, and especially my friend and co-pastor, Tim Day.
Hey, everybody. It's great to be able to tag along as Robin to Batman, I guess.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, if you say so. Tim, who are we, just for people who are listening, what's our role together at the Meeting House?
Yeah, we, Bruxy and I, work together as co-leaders within the Meeting House church family. I guess you could see us as sort of the mom and dad of the Meeting House. We share in leadership and vision. Bruxy specifically leads as our teaching pastor and as our primary communicator across all of our sites and beyond in terms of carrying this message. And then I work internally giving leadership to the staff team and really asking the question, how can we practically translate this message into daily life? And trying to help our entire leadership, our volunteer leadership, as well as our staff leadership partner together to say, how can we actually live this out?
All right. So Tim, for those of you who are listening, has the title of senior pastor at our church, the Meeting House. I'm the teaching pastor, and we really do partner together to make things happen here. And this book has been born out of the conversation of our community. So it makes good sense for the two of us to make this podcast conversational and walk through this as much as possible together. And so for this next session, now we've had kind of a placeholder podcast there for you already. Perhaps many of you have listened to that. It was a book release party and a rather long podcast. I think it was over an hour long in total. From now on, the episodes will be shorter as we work through the chapters. We're not making a promise of how long they'll be, but they'll be shorter than that. And right now, we just want to take a few moments to talk through some of the issues that are raised in the preface of the book. Now, as we explained last week, this is a kind of a dietary supplement for those of you who are reading the book, kind of like audible study notes. If you haven't read the book, I think you'll still get something out of this podcast, and there'll be worthwhile conversation for you. But it will probably work best for you as you also work through the material of the book and allow one to feed the other. We're not going to just repeat verbatim what's in the book, but we're going to try and build on that, assuming that you've got some basic knowledge and have some interest in it already. So just dive into some of the issues that are raised in the preface, and Tim, I'd love to raise them for you and I just to talk about.
Sure, sounds great.
One is the target audience for this book and really for this podcast. It seems to me that there's a growing segment of people who would say, I'm kind of through with religion. It's let me down or it's disappointed me, but I'm not prepared to jettison the idea of God. What's been your experience as far as that being a segment of our population that's worth talking to?
Yeah, I think it's in my own experience, our own dialogue here within Toronto and then beyond as you look at the news. I think the fact that we have a global community now that in a sense through technology we can look in on what's happening across the world. What I think a lot of people are encountering is that the role of religion on the planet is increasingly becoming obvious to people that it's a destructive influence. And this isn't to center out any one particular religion. I think many people are starting to see the negative side of religion on a pretty broad level. Let's just start with the Christian religion. Sort of, we here in the West, we have the history of things like the Crusades, the Inquisition, history of church splits, wars between Protestants and Catholics.
And even in more recent times, just hanging out with people who claim to be thoroughly religious, sometimes they're the least kind people on the planet. Yeah. They've often got anger issues or are very judgmental, separatist.
As we're going to talk not so much about everybody else who's religious, there's going to be a point in time where we really have to turn it in on ourselves and talk about the religious nature of the human heart. So please don't read us as saying that this is everybody else's issue and somehow we're in this new lofty place. Right. I think what people are tuning into is there's something within the human heart that when we get into the notion of that we're somehow exclusively on the side of God and we built this system that's got all figured out, that something almost, if I can say, inhuman or unkind starts to emerge in the human spirit.
Well, it seems like we're playing with psychological fire to dare, for the human psyche to dare hold on to the opinion that I have a divine right to what I believe,
yeah.
and I'm given my information by God. Everyone else is wrong, yeah. and that's almost too great a burden to bear for human psyche without it leading to some form of arrogance and judgmentalism, etc. But then, what do we do with that? Do we throw it all out together, or can Jesus, help us navigate a way through that?
Well, I think that's where a lot of people, you come back to this, Bruxy, that you said, a lot of people don't want to jettison God. Mm-hmm. They actually have an innate desire, hunger, longing for a connection with the divine, with a sense of, some people frame it as the cosmic energy or this greater life force or this greater sense of divine being. So they have a hunger, they have an appetite for it. But when they look at religion, they look at it and they see that the way it forms people into community and the sort of the destructive elements, they say, I just don't want to go there. Mm. I'm not looking for that. I'm still looking for God, but I'm not looking for religion. Mm. And I think Jesus then begins to stand out, because what's fascinating about Jesus, when you get into his story, and people seem to intuitively and quickly pick this up, he isn't the figurehead of, in his own day, of a monolithic religion, of an institutional form. He's very grassroots. He's very personable. He's the friend of the person who's down and out. Mm. He just hangs out with people. There's a sense of the divine with him, but it's not being translated into a big organizational institution.
And he's surrounded by people who are labeled sinners. And it's fair to say that within that context, within first century Israel, the religious people labeled as sinners, not just those people who were the most grossly immoral in the culture,
yes.
but sinners was anyone who was kind of outside of the religious system,
yeah.
who was not practicing properly, who didn't attend yeah. all the right services and do all the right rituals. And if they were kind of ostracized or by their own choice did not participate in the religious system, to the full extent anyway, they were labeled as sinners. And these are the people Jesus seemed to hang out with.
Yeah, so I think it makes sense when we tune into his life and his stories and his willingness to essentially stand up to the religious institution and take it on, and then be willing to lay his life down in an act of self-sacrificial love.
Mm.
There's something very transcendent about it. There's something that has the stamp of divine. And I think that's what draws all of us to him, regardless of what sort of background or faith position you come from.
Yeah.
There's something incredibly attractive about who Jesus is. And I think he makes a great starting point, regardless of where you're coming from,
yeah.
if you're talking about spirituality without religion.
Yeah, yeah, good point. And we're going to talk more about that in the next episode. But before we close, wait, we just got started. I told you they would be shorter now. It does seem to be, you mentioned Jesus being a good starting point. It does seem to be that, not for everyone, but for most people who may be hostile towards religion, they still seem to have a soft spot for Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
In many conversations that I have with people, they might be flipping mad at the Christian religion, the church,
yeah.
and at religion in general. But if I raise the issue of Jesus himself, they soften and they backpedal a bit and say, no, he's okay. Jesus
yes,
is okay.
Yes.
And it does seem that people want Jesus on their side.
Yeah.
What do you think is going on there? Why, if I hated a religion that some guy Bob started, I'd be ticked off with Bob. I'd say, I can't stand Bob. Look at all the terrible stuff Bob's brought into the world. But it seems as though people almost intuitively
yeah.
don't blame Jesus for that.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I think there's something within people that just have a sense or an intuition that they can separate out the history of the Christian church from Jesus himself, that they can separate out the institution that's claimed his name and then has done a lot of stuff that, to be quite honest, I think even a lot of Christians today are quite embarrassed about.
Hmm.
They can separate that out from just the essence of who Jesus was. And so I think even for other world religions, whether it's the Buddhist who want to enfold him as one of their wise teachers,
right.
or the Hindu who want to see him as one of their
expressions of the divine, an avatar.
An avatar, yeah. an expression of the divine. Or within the Muslim faith, to see him as a prophet.
Mm-hmm.
I think, or even just even secularists wanting to see him as an incredibly influential person. Mm-hmm. Historians mm-hmm. will say he's maybe the sole person who's influenced the planet more than anybody else.
Right, right.
I think everybody sees that there is something unique about him.
Yes, and there is even most recently a movement among many Jewish scholars to
yes.
reclaim him
as a rabbi.
As a rabbi who was reforming the religion within his day.
Reforming yeah. his religion. So, and maybe if we can just even drill a bit harder into this, I'm not sure that anywhere else on the planet or in the history has there been a leader that has combined a couple of key teachings that still stand as a prophetic voice on the landscape of history. One is the call to intimate spirituality with the divine without religion. That, what he modeled, what he portrayed, telling stories, not dictating rules, calling people to family, not creating hierarchy. There's something in there that I think is profound and that the human spirit picks up on when they encounter Jesus. The second thing I think that happens with Jesus is that his vision of community is radical in that it is anchored in incredible parties, inclusivity, women, men, all class distinction being wiped out, slaves beside their masters, right? Races being reconciled. That again, it's like, millennia ahead of its time in terms of the vision he was casting was starting to be portrayed in his first Christ followers. Then the third one is enemy love. And, many of the ancients proclaimed the message of, don't do unto others. How is it framed?
Right. That don't do what you don't want done to you.
What you don't want done to you.
Right.
Where he became proactive in actually calling people
to be proactive
in loving your enemies.
Yeah.
And again, in a world that in his own day and age, but then, look over the course of human history, who has really stood up and said, I want to lead a revolution where people love their enemies, where they're willing to die sacrificially rather than kill to defend their own.
Yeah.
And this, I think, is, just simply when people encounter us, puts him in a different category.
Yeah, when that ends up calling us to model what actually God models for us through Jesus, that God dies for his enemies, right? He loves his enemies. The people that are hating him, he's willing to die for rather than to throw a thunderbolt at them. What an amazing... It's a shocking portrayal of God.
Yeah, to think God wants to wipe out religion.
Yeah.
He just wants to hang out with us.
Yeah.
And he wants to call us to a life of radical generosity and self-sacrifice to restore a loving family that includes everyone, regardless of your background. Yeah. That's an incredible vision.
It is. There's going to be people who are listening who are saying, I haven't heard this before. Are you telling me that this is actually in the Bible, or are you guys just talking about your armpit or whatever? You're making this up. Well, this is what we're here for with this podcast. We're going to walk through the biblical evidence. And it's fascinating. It's going to be biblical evidence. This is what we'll talk about in the next episode, that we're not making this stuff up and we're not drawing it from some distant Gnostic gospel or some mystery text. We're actually finding this incredibly subversive message within the text of the Bible itself that's been embraced by the Christian church for 2,000 years. So I find even that both ironic as well as subversive. And we'll, throughout the episodes of this podcast, as in the chapters of the book, we'll be walking through the biblical evidence for why we have arrived at this view of Jesus.
Yeah, it's funny in that there's this trend out there to find the lost story or the secret message of the Bible. And really, actually, the plain message of the Bible
is shocking.
It's shocking. And is actually, because it's been lost, has sort of been the big scandal under our nose the whole time.
Yes, that's right. That's right. We've lost it by becoming too familiar with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, listen, with that in mind, just let's hold up one teaching of Jesus as an example that when you see his subversive approach to the religious system of his day, all of a sudden many familiar stories take on a whole new dimension. Now, in the last episode, the book launch talk, I talked a bit about the prodigal son and how that happens with the parable of the prodigal son. What many have become overly familiar with, a story of a very forgiving father to his rebellious son, also has a cutting edge dimension with an older brother who represents the do-good religious person who is scandalized by God's embrace of sinners and Christ's embrace of sinners in his daily life and the people that kind of form his posse that he hangs out with. And so we talked about the kind of the plot twist at the end of that. But that's in Luke chapter 15, and it's something that's not dealt with in detail in the book, but it's a great case study in how you can kind of take a second look at the teaching of Jesus and see the cutting-edge insult towards people who would want to cling to their religious system. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, Jesus in his day was well aware of the prophetic voices of the Old Testament, and they were very clear. They said, look, there's a problem with the human heart. It's hard as stone, and God needs to change it from the inside out, and you have to get a new heart. That's repeated by prophets like Ezekiel and Jeremiah. And the this issue of the human heart, I think Jesus picks up in this story. He loves to tell stories that are just rich, pregnant with meaning. I think he gets at what are the two problems with the human heart. What is the problems of the two, the stony human heart that I have? What's the problem with my heart? The younger brother, I believe, characterizes the problem with the human heart in that we are self-centered, and in our self-centeredness, we dive into a self-indulgent approach to life that ultimately leads to our own destruction. That, in a sense, we can't restrain our own desires, the self-centeredness. This younger brother, as he goes out and takes all the good things his father gives him, spends it on himself, partying, wild women, anything to please his own senses, please himself. He ends up bankrupt, in a pigsty, eating pig food, and there he comes to his senses. And, you know, Jesus, in telling this story and talking about the first brother, says, okay, look, there's one part, there's one side of the human heart. One problem, the human heart, and that is we're given towards self-indulgence. And this younger brother characterizes it. Now, this we as humans often are aware of, we're conscious of, and we hate in our own life. Hmm. It's the sin we hate. We hate the fact we can't stop whatever it is that we want to stop doing, but we just find the desires drive us, their own self-centered self-indulgence. And so we hate that we eating, drinking, partying, sex, whatever it is, there's something inside I've said, I wish I had better control in my life. I hate this type of sin. Mm. Now, this sin, which we all hate and don't like, and to be honest, the church has preached the hardest against over the years, in Jesus' story, this isn't the biggest problem with the human heart. It's actually the part of the human heart that's easier to deal with than the other problem. And the reason why it's easier to deal with is because this approach to life, this problem with the human heart, actually leads us into pain. And because of our pain, we have a chance to wake up. Mm-hmm. We come to our senses. We sort of end up in some form of a pigsty. Let's say it's even you abused your body to the nth degree, and you finally are dying because of the impact of how you've abused your body. There in your deathbed, you probably have a shot at coming to your senses and saying, this is a terrible way to live.
Right. So there's some kinds of sin that actually, because of the painful consequence they carry, actually carry more hope for repentance, reconciliation with God's way of living.
Yeah, in the story itself, he talks about him coming to himself, to himself. Yeah. And he sort of gets back to his right mind. Mm. And so the self-indulgent part of us actually, as hard as it feels like to control, as much as we hate it, actually inherently has within it some hope in that at some point in time we have a shot of waking up and saying, I don't want to live this way. Yeah. And so in the story, the younger brother comes home, finds out the father figure, the God figure, this crazy grace for him. It's like, doesn't care about how much he screwed up. He's just glad he's coming home. Yeah. And he'll actually take care of all the cleanup operation and welcome into the best party he's ever seen. You know, the brother went looking for self-indulgence, for joy through a celebration of life, but did it in a self-centered way that ended up ruining himself. He comes back to the father and finds that, you know, that the father's got a better source of joy, better love for partying, a better sense of community. And if he had just come home, actually his soul, his heart, his desires would be satisfied in the best possible way. And he doesn't have to clean himself up to come home. He just walk in a complete mess, and dad'll do the rest.
Yeah,
God'll
take
it. So that's an awesome story. Think of the people in Jesus' day who just said, I want in on that.
Yeah,
I want in. Now, Jesus then goes on to tell another part of the story, which actually is the harder part of the human heart. And it's characterized by the older brother.
I like the fact, by the way, that you're not pushing these into two categories of people, the younger brothers out there and the older brothers out there, but actually pointing out that this is potentially two aspects of each person's heart, that there are issues and times and parts of our lives where we're tempted to play the role of the younger brother, and there'll be other times, other days of the week, other conversations where we're tempted to play the older brother. I think that's a brilliant encouragement for all of us then to not just categorize ourselves or other people and say, here are the issues I have to worry about and not the other issues, but to always be on our guard against both.
Yeah, and I would think that's part of the insight Jesus is trying to push us to, is that it is actually all of us.
Yeah.
All of us have both sides.
Yeah. So the older brother in me and in you.
And the younger brother in me and in you.
Yeah.
They're both issues to deal with.
Yeah. All right.
But the good news, as Jesus, what he's trying to explain, is there's actually good news for both sides.
Hmm.
As we get to the older brother, though, we realize that side of the good news is the tougher nut to crack, and it's in our own self-awareness. The older brother, as you said in the story, he's out in the field of his own self-righteousness, marching up and down the field, thinking about how great he is because he's figured out the great, you know, the life that he wants. He's totally in control, and he has figured out what it means to be righteous.
He's proud of his own lack of rebellion.
He seems
to have his life together.
He is organized. He is disciplined.
Yeah.
He is not self-indulgent. He's in command.
Right.
And in that, he has found, like you said, he's proud and he feels good. And when the younger brother comes home, he looks down his nose and despises him and despises the father for being lavishly graceful to the younger brother. And so what we see here in the older brother is not a self-centeredness that leads to self-indulgence, but a self-centeredness that leads to self-saving and self-righteousness. Mm. In that it isn't me trying to indulge myself to make myself sort of satisfied and content. It is more this side, I want to clean myself up. I want to have everything organized in my life. I want to put everything in order. And so it's not moral sin that the older brother struggles with. He struggles with religious sin. Mm. Is he far from the Father? He's just as far from the Father as the younger brother is. The younger brother is far in his brothel or in his party or in his pigsty. The older brother is just as far from the Father out in his field of his own self-righteousness. He doesn't get the Father. He's not experiencing the heart of the Father, understanding how kind the Father is. He's not a part of the party. He's marching up and down the field and just feeling good about himself in his own religious way. And here the challenge at the end of the story is, because it doesn't end with Jesus telling us what happens with the older brother. He stops it with the father pleading with the older brother to come in. Now, the listeners of his day, as you talked about in the other podcast, I believe, he's talking to the religious leaders and asking them, will they come into the party? Right. Will they stop judging everybody that is experiencing this incredible outpouring of kindness from God?
Yeah.
Will they come in? Will they leave their self-righteousness and come into the party? And see, that's an important point, because the younger brothers come to their senses. The question is, will the part of my heart that is more like the older brother come to its sense, come back to itself? Or will I live in my own self-righteousness? You see, living a religiously self-righteous life does not produce pain. The only pain it produces is broken relationships, as we see between the older brother and the younger brother. What's interesting is that the human heart seems comfortable with broken relationships. It's not comfortable with my own pain. If I'm dying from cancer, or if I'm dying from emotionally dying because everybody hates me and my family's falling apart.
My liver's rotten from drunkenness, I've done damage to people because of my drug use
Whatever that we will react to. But if it's just like I'm mad at somebody else and looking down my nose at somebody else, and I realize, do you know what? I'm cutting them. I'm not going to talk to them anymore. Seems like our heart's climatized to that.
Yeah. Well, religious people in that situation can always, apparently in their own mind, pull God over to their own side. So I may have broken my relationships with others, but at least me and God are hanging out here.
Yeah.
At least someone who's ruining their life through obvious sin can say, I know I need...
I'm screwed up.
I need to get it back to God.
Yeah, we're here, and with God on our side, we feel pretty self-satisfied.
Yeah.
And that's where Jesus comes to me, comes to all of us and challenges us and says, are you going to come to your senses? You're just as far from God. You're not getting it. You're not getting how this divine parent that you have.
Yeah.
And his love for all. You know, because his perspective, it's interesting. He not only loves the younger brother, he loves the older brother. He loves them both. Just as he ran to the younger brother who's coming home, he's actually cares so much to go out and begin pleading with the religious.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that we see in Jesus in his desire is his expression of God with us, if we can say that.
Yeah.
His desire is to see all people restored. And not just the part of my human heart that gives towards self-indulgence, but he also wants to see me restored, called out of my own religious mindset, and get me back into a community where everybody's welcome, regardless if your background is flawless and spotless, or whether you're just a complete, you know, sort of a history of having made every possible bad decision you can make.
Yeah.
That this is a place where everybody's welcome back, and God's grace and love is big enough.
That's beautiful, because what it ends up doing then is leveling the playing field for those people who are more obviously screwed up with those people who are religiously screwed up but hiding it. It creates an opportunity for us all to come together and say, we need to learn together. Mm-hmm. We need to have a sense of family together as older brothers and younger brothers. And as prodigals and religious do-gooders. We all need to resubmit ourselves to this amazing mm-hmm. grace that Jesus is talking about. And that that itself undoes a lot of damage of religious mm-hmm. proselytization and evangelism, this sense that we have all the righteousness and the sinners, the pagans, are the ones who are terribly lost and are living in error and in darkness. And
that's right.
It adjusts our mentality from the beginning so that we come alongside people and say, here's what I'm learning and what are you learning? And
that's right.
And let's learn from each other as well as we walk through this.
This vision of community that Jesus lays out is an incredibly level playing field.
Mm.
We're all the same.
Yeah, yeah. Tim, this has been great. I think that's enough for now for this
yeah.
episode. Next episode, we're going to talk more about the Bible as an irreligious document
yep.
and move forward there. Thanks for listening now. Hopefully by now you can understand why I keep this guy Tim around. He's a pretty good egg. And if you have any feedback or questions, please write to feedback@theendofreligion.org. You can go to theendofreligion.org for more information, to check out other podcasts. But we'd also love to hear from you. Questions or comments about this podcast or about the book, please write to feedback@theendofreligion.org. And until next time, wow, we didn't practice any really snappy ending to the podcast. We've got to have like our shtick, don't we? I don't have
maybe
a shtick.
Maybe our shtick would just be this. We don't know
fumbling
what we're
fumbling at the end every time. That's right. We'll work on a shtick for next time.
Yeah. We'll see you then.
Bye.